First of all, I would like to acknowledge and to thank the organizer for the invitation. So indeed, I'm going to talk about what numerical modeling can tell us about this dislocation, mostly dislocation creep mechanism in Earth mantle. You've got the list here of the name of all the co-authors involved in this kind of studies. Well, when we talk about creep mechanism, you know that usually we distinguish between two main mechanisms. The first one is diffusion creep, where point defect diffusion is mainly involved in the deformation, and point defect diffusion can either occur in the bulk of the grain of the crystal or through diffusion on a grain boundary. And the second mechanism, it's called dislocation creep. Where we have dislocation activity. Just so very briefly, a few words about dislocation. Dislocation is a linear defect. They do exist, as you can see here on this TM micrograph of dislocation in olivine. Dislocation are characterized by a Burgers vector, which is the amount of shear carried by the defect. And so we distinguish usually when the Burgers vector is parallel to the line, we call it a screw dislocation line. And when Burgers vector is normal to the line, we call it an edge dislocation line. But anyway, something very interesting is the fact that if you look very close to the vicinity of the core, an important feature is how atoms are exactly arranged near the dislocation core. And you have here an high resolution TM micrograph of a dislocation. The dislocation is right there. Now, talking about how this defect move in crystal, there is two different motions. The first one is glide. When you apply stress on dislocation, the dislocation is right there. You stress the dislocation and it starts to move, and it moves in its glide plane. The second way for dislocation to move is what is called climb. Climb is now what happens when dislocation emits or absorb point defect. So you have the dislocation there in its glide plane, point defect is absorbed by the dislocation, and you see that dislocation moves upward of the glide plane. Well, so both process occurs in what we call dislocation creep. And in the following of my talk, I will mainly focus on this creep mechanism. We talk about dislocation glide, and we will talk also about how climb can assist dislocation glide in further deformation process. And, well, to do that, what we are doing is we are trying to develop a kind of multiscale model for dislocation creep. And the idea is to couple two different simulation scale. The first is atomistic calculation scale. So you have atoms, and you see the defect here in the simulation cell. At this scale, what we look for is definitely intrinsic properties of the defect, of the dislocation. So we look for dislocation mobility, effect of pressure on this mobility, effect of temperature on this mobility. And once we have intrinsic properties of this defect, we transfer all these intrinsic properties to a mesoscale simulation, which treats, in fact, the collective behavior of all your defects present in your crystal. And usually, this is done using what we call dislocation dynamic simulation. The acronym is DD. It's also at this stage that we introduce the climb of dislocation, as you will see later. Well, the goal is at the end to try to say something about strain rate versus stress, to try to say something about constitutive equation rheological law. So let's start with the first step of the modeling, so atomistic calculation. Most of the results I will show you comes from mostly classical molecular dynamic simulation. So you've got here an example of a simulation cell. It corresponds to more than 100 of thousands of atoms present, and we have a dislocation inside. As I said, we look for intrinsic properties. So we look to what we call the core structure. It's indeed how atoms arrange near the core, but also we try to track the motion. So if you apply stress, dislocation has to in response to an applied stress dislocation has to overcome the lattice friction of the material. So the lattice friction is here represented in green, so you see this kind of valley. So and we call that the payoff potential. So if you want to move this stress dislocation, you have to push on it with a stress which with a critical stretch which is called the payoff stress. Just very rapidly, a first example of what is a dislocation core. It comes from dislocation in Watsley Heights. Slip system is there. So that's the Burgers vector, that's the glide plane. And you see here the atomic arrangement of the dislocation in its glide plane. So the glide plane corresponds to this view, and the line is like this. You can see that arrangements are rather complex, and we have here a dissociation into two partial. One partial dislocation there, one partial other dislocation there, and in between a stacking fault. Whether it's either complex, it exactly corresponds to what we see in TM micrographs. The same dislocation in TM micrographs reveals that indeed it's decomposed into two partial, as you can see here, with the two contrasts. So it's like we have two lines and a stacking fault in between. To go further, here you have a dislocation core, so it's an edge. You see the core there, perfect crystal. The dislocation is here. So now the line is going out from the board, and it's a dislocation in Bridgmanite. Once we have this kind of core, so the dislocation in the cell, well, the good thing with atomistic calculation is we can stress or strain the cell. And so if you do that very slowly, you increase the stress. It's like this, as a function of strain, you have a stress-strain curve that goes up, until a point where, whoop, you have a drop. And at this point, exactly there, the dislocation starts to move. So this point corresponds to the payoff stress. For this stress, your dislocation moves as a straight line, overcoming the lattice friction. And also the good point with atomistic calculation is now that we can track how this payoff stress evolves as a function of pressure. So once again, in Bridgmanite, two typical slip system, and you see how the payoff stress evolves with pressure. So it's increased. You have a huge increase. It's classically what happens. So pressure has an effect of payoff stress, well, except if you have a phase transition when you change from one mineral to another. For example, here, when you go to a post-perovskite, yes, you see in mechanical properties a huge drop, and because payoff stress in post-perovskite are very low compared to what is recorded in Bridgmanite. So this is really a weak phase from the mechanical point of view. Okay, one question arises: how this payoff stress compare with experimental data of flow stress? So on this graph, you have the flow stress plotted as a function of temperature, and here all experimental data. Clearly, it's difficult to compare our calculation because our calculations are there, done without any temperature. So at this point, it's very difficult. The only things we can say is, okay, at least we are in a good trend. We have the right order of magnitude. Well, same conclusion for ringwoodite. We have less experimental data. The experimental data are there, and all payoff stress are here. So if we want to go further, it's important now to try to say something about how this stress evolve with temperature. But if we want to have a look to it, we have first to come back to the mechanism. In fact, when you have temperature and stress, dislocation doesn't move anymore as a straight line, but it moves by nucleation of kind of bulge. You see the line with the effect, the conjugate effect of both temperature and stress, the line starts to bulge over the payoff potential. And we call that a kink pair mechanism. The kink simply corresponds to this small part of the line that is really lying on the top of the potential. This kind of situation, yeah, it's just a drawing, but we can exactly compute it. And we compute it, and in fact, this kink, so this two piece of dislocation, costs you extra energy. And you can compute also the extra energy you need. So when we do that, the amount of extra energy are there. It's in again an example in Bridgmanite, but also what you can compute is how this amount of energy will evolve as a function of applied stress, because the stress, of course, the work of the stress, as it's shown in this expression, the work of stress will help you to promote this process. And now, if we now take this kink pair energy as a function of stress, simply this thing is very useful because it's express the velocity of dislocation. In fact, your dislocation glide for the velocity of your dislocation, the velocity comes from the probability of this kingpin nucleation. So the probability is given by the exponential term here, where we plug this extra energy. And in front, you have just a pre-exponential factor, which is the frequency of attempt of this process. Okay, so we have velocity in glide for dislocation. To go a little bit further, what we can do is talk about plasticity. So in fact, we have an equation, the overall equation, which links the strain rate to the dislocation velocity. It's nothing less than the strain rate is simply the number of dislocation you have in your sample times the Burgers vector times the velocity at which dislocation move. And if now we plug the previous expression for the velocity inside, what we can do is to extract, to reformulate this equation and to extract the stress and say stress will be function of temperature. So at the end of the day, you end up with this kind of expression where you have the flow stress, function of temperature, and all these parameters. I would like to point out that all these parameters here simply comes from atomistic calculation. There is no fitting parameter at all. And you know also the good point is that with this kind of calculation now we can also say something about the effect of strain rate, because the strain rate is in fact is there. It's hidden in this C constant, but the strain rate is there, so I will show you what can be the effect of strain rate a little bit later. So now let's use this expression and compare this expression coming from atomistic calculation with experimental data. So the result of our calculation are this blue or red line. It's in Ringudite, and you compare with experimental data. It's amazing how we can really match the decrease of the flow stress as a function of temperature and goes through the experimental data for the easier slip system in Ringudite. The same, we can do the same for Watsleyite. You have the result for Watsleyite. Once again, you see that we have not only good order of magnitude, but the right decrease. Or for Bridgmanite, where you've got the few experimental flow stress points coming from this experiment, and the result of our calculation in green for two slip system. Also, on this plot, so the flow stress as a function of temperature, I put the result of our calculation for magnesium oxide just to highlight that indeed we can, with atomistic calculation, recover the contrast in strength in between periclase and bridgmanites. Well, I say that we have the strain rate, or we can track the strain rate effect. So it's again, it's the stress for dislocation to glide in Watsleyite plotted as a function of temperature. You see this value comes from the previous graph where we use a typical laboratory strain rate. But now, if we change in our calculation, if we change the strain rate, so we decrease strongly the strain rate, you see that curve shift, and this corresponds to, in fact, for a given temperature, to a decrease of the stress needed for further glide of dislocation. However, it's Watsleyite, so if we stay around, let's say, 1,500 Kelvin, we see that whatever we do, even if we decrease the strain rate, the amount of stress you need to apply for further glide of dislocation remains quite very high, of at least 500 megapascal. So it's still very high stress. Anyway, so at this stage, I think we can be confident because we match with experimental data, so we can be confident into our atomistic calculation, and especially in the velocity we extract from this atomistic calculation. So the next step, as I said in my introduction, is now to transfer this to the mesoscale simulation. Here, just we need also at this stage to introduce climb velocity. So just a small reminding that climb velocity, climb process, it's simply when dislocation absorb or emit point defect. It means that the velocity at which dislocation goes away from its glide plane will be function not only on the stress, you've got the stress here, but will also be a function of self-diffusion coefficient. Okay? And if you assume steady state condition, constant vacancy concentration, then you end up with this expression. So now in our simulation, we have two velocity, one velocity for dislocation glide and one velocity for dislocation climb. So first thing we can do is just to have a look of the interplay, because there will be an interplay between these two kind of velocity. So to look at this interplay, we'll start to say something about olivin. So what you have here on this map is the ratio. We plot the ratio of glide velocity over climb velocity as a function of both stress and temperature. And if you look to the scale here of the color code, you see that glide velocity will be whatever the temperature or the stress will be order of magnitude faster than climb velocity, which is basically what you can have in mind because, as I said, climb involves point defect diffusion. Okay? So now let's see what happens when we run the simulation with this kind of velocity for the dislocation. So yeah. We have a mesoscale simulation where we put dislocation. The typical snapshot of the simulation is there. Dislocation has a small cross you can see here. So now dislocation, again, you see the dislocation line like this. And we start to deform, to apply an external stress to the sample. If we have only glide of dislocation, you start to produce strain, so it's a red curve here. You produce plastic strain, but you reach very rapidly a point where, well, you cannot produce any more plastic strain, simply because you develop a microstructure, and all dislocation inside your microstructure are now locked. Nothing more can happen. So if you want to produce more plastic strain, if you want to go further, you need something else. And something else is you need that dislocation escapes from their glide plane, so climb. And indeed, if we introduce climb, it's now the blue curve here. If we introduce climb in the simulation, well, there is climb event, and climb promote the deformation process of the sample, as you can see here. So now from this curve, because we plot here the plastic strain as a function of time, we can end up with the strain rate for a given condition of applied stress. Something I would say I would like to add that as it's a simulation, you can try to extract important features of your simulation. So if we now compare the amount of strain produced by glide and the amount of strain produced by climb in this kind of experiment, you see that climb do not produce any strain. And all the strain comes from the glide. However, climb is very important because it's a mechanism that allows dislocation to further move and deform your sample. And this kind of dislocation creep mechanism is known for a while, and it's called usually the Wirtmann creep process. Okay, so now I move to lower mantle, so same exercise with Bridgmanite. First thing, let's have a look to once again the velocity for dislocation in during glide process and the velocity in climb process. Bridgmanite, 30 gigapascal of pressure, so lower mantle condition, I would say. Same map, temperature as a function of stress. Just now, have a look to the scale there. If we compare to what we have in mind for olivine, in case of Bridgmanite, we have only a very small window here at very high stress where the glide is more faster than climb process. So if you do experiment in this very small window, you expect to find dislocation creep process quite equivalent to what we have seen in olivine, for example. However, all the other part of the map is simply dominated by this quite a purple color, which means that whatever the condition in this second window, dislocation doesn't, in Bridgmanite, dislocation doesn't glide at all. And in fact, it doesn't glide because to glide dislocation will require in Bridgmanite very high stress, so it cannot occur, and you are simply left with climb of dislocation. So now the question is, okay, do climb, and we can call it pure climb because it's the only process for your dislocation, can pure climb produce strain and produce further deformation of Bridgmanite sample? So once again, we are back to the mesoscale simulation, where we, for Bridgmanite, we put two types of dislocation, so the blue and the red one. It corresponds to Burgers vector 100 or 010 in Bridgmanite PBNM structure. And snapshot of the simulation cell are given here. You recover the stress field of dislocation with this color code. Anyway, so now we apply this condition during the simulation: a low stress, high temperature, and the pressure. This is the pressure applied, and you see that after a transient, if you look to the strain as a function of time, you see that after a transient, we end up with a nice constant strain rate simulation. So what we can do is change now condition in stress, in applied stress. So we vary the applied stress and we plot the result of strain rate as a function of applied stress. So it's here what you have. You know, the strain rate function of stress for quite low stress, below 100 megapascal. Result of pure climb process are given by these two red line. So it's different type of simulation, and the difference between the two simulations is the dislocation density we initially input in the system. But what we see, it's with this pure climb process, we can see that even at very low stress, 10 megapascal or 100 megapascal, we are able to reach strain rate of the order of 10 to the minus 15, so quite close to what we can expect from lower mantle. Something else that we can do, I say in my introduction that there is not only, here we talk about dislocation creep, but there is also diffusion creep. If you want to reach for the same value of stress, this kind of strain rate considering diffusion creep, it's perfect, then if you apply Navarro-Ehring equation, you see that to reach the same amount of strain rate as a function of stress, you need to consider a very small grain with a grain size below 0.1 millimeter. So if grains are larger than 0.1 millimeter, this kind of climb process will be much more efficient than diffusion, purely diffusion process. Okay, so no, wrong way. No. Well, this one is okay. So now, what I think is that this pure climb creep process, I think it's a very important mechanism for deformation in planetary interiors and especially in lower mantle. And I would like to add a few facts about it. With this process, strain will be produced by climb of dislocation. And as a consequence, as there is no glide, the consequence is that we do not expect any crystal preferred orientation because there is no rotation during climb of dislocation. Another important feature for this kind of creep mechanism, pure creep mechanism, is that there is no grain size dependence, and that, of course, everything will be controlled by diffusion because we need diffusion of point defect to climb. However, it is definitely not sure that the rheology may be linear or not. And this point, we are still working on this point. And so now, with this, just a summary of my conclusion that we are now able to start from the atomic scale and to say something about the collective behavior of dislocation and what happens for lower mantle. We think that creep may definitely involve a kind of pure climb creep process. And with this, thank you for your attention.